I'm glad that we're a family. It's just great to be together. I'd like to read something from someone reflecting back upon their mother. And this it's called Mean Mom. We had the meanest mother in the whole world. While other kids ate candy for breakfast, we had to eat cereal, eggs, and toast. When others had a Pepsi and a Twinkie for lunch, we had to eat sandwiches. And you can guess our mother fixed this dinner that was different from the other kids, too. Mother insisted on knowing where we were at all times. You'd think we were convicts in prison. She had to know who our friends were and what we were doing with them. She insisted that if we said we would be gone for an hour, we would be gone for an hour or less. We were ashamed to admit it, but she had the nerve to break the child labor laws and by making us work. We had to wash the dishes, make the beds, learn to cook, vacuum the floor, do laundry, and all sorts of cruel jobs. I think she would lie awake at night thinking of more things for us to do. She always insisted on us telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. By the time we were teenagers, she could read our minds. Then life was really tough. Mother wouldn't let our friends just honk the horn when they drove up. They had to come up to the door so she could meet them. While everyone else could date when they were 12 or 13, we had to wait until we were 16. Because of our mother, we missed out on lots of things that other kids experienced. None of us have ever been caught shoplifting, vandalizing others' property, or ever arrested for any crime. It was all her fault. Now that we have left home, we are all God-fearing, educated, honest adults. We are doing our best to be mean parents, just like Mom was. I think that's what's wrong with the world today. It just doesn't have enough mean moms anymore. Well, we're celebrating Mother's Day today, and it really is a day to celebrate, to be joyful, to appreciate our mothers, and really that's a universal application in Mother's Day because every single human being has a mother. But Mother's Day can also be a difficult day for many of us. Sometimes maybe we lacked a mother. Maybe our mother was taken away from us by death or maybe by an illness or just wasn't present because of physical or mental illness. Or maybe our mother really wasn't who God made her to be, but she was just self-centered or narcissistic, and just everything revolved around moms. I've met some people like that, and it can be hard when you look back and see what motherhood is to be, to see what you missed. But I think it's important for us to remember that God can make up for anything we missed in our childhood. He can make up for that. For others, Mother's Day is difficult because it seems like this dream of motherhood that we've had is just passing us by. We're getting older. Or maybe it has passed us by and it's just not going to be. And that death of a dream can be difficult and hard. And God shows us He has another vocation for us other than what we had hoped and planned. Not necessarily lesser, not less significant, but just different. So we have to see that God calls us to different things, and it's okay to mourn that loss. A third reason that sometimes Mother's Day can be difficult is because some of us, we look back and we regret. We are parents, and we look back and we regret some of the ways that we wish we would have parented better. We've made mistakes. And I'd just like to say to that, you know, maybe we didn't know the Lord, or maybe we weren't walking with the Lord, or maybe there are things that we just were blind to, and we just didn't see them, or if we did see them, we didn't know how to change them, or didn't take the effort or make the choices to make those changes. And just looking back, we can look back with regret. But I think for us, we need to remember that God is the Redeemer. God can redeem our errors. That's his business. That's what he's into. God will redeem. So how today can we encourage and honor moms? We're going to talk about that today. Sure, send her a gift. Encourage her. Give her a card. Give her a call. But are there some deeper things that we as Christians, some principles, some ways that we can encourage moms? And we're going to look at that this morning. Four ways to honor mom. And there are two things that we should stop doing and two things that we should start doing. So let's just look at those. First, stop expecting her to be a man. Now you say, what's that about? And let me just say before I go farther here, is this message this morning is going to be countercultural. You might want to hold on to your seats a little bit here. It's going to be countercultural. And I think that's okay. The Bible is countercultural. The Bible calls us to things different than our culture. It calls even us Christians to things different from our Christian culture. And so today, you know, at the end of the message, you might look up here and say, well, that's just an old man born in the 50s, and he's just out of it. Well, you're probably right there. In fact, you are right. But I'd just like you to listen up. I'd just like you to consider these things. They may be different than what the culture says and what you've learned. There may be some pushback here. I'd like to just push back a little bit and have you think about it. Don't just reject it out of hand. So the first one is to stop expecting her to be a man because she's a woman. We should treat her like one. We should celebrate femininity and encourage it and rejoice in it. You see, in our culture, we have this assumption when it comes to male and female interaction and comparison. We have this assumption that sameness, equality equals sameness. My wife was with our granddaughters a few weeks ago, and she was doing something in the kitchen, I think, and just talking with them, and our little 9-year-old granddaughter said, well, girls can do anything boys can do. I think she was maybe thinking about running fast because she's one of the fastest runners in her class. There's only one little boy that can run faster than her. And my wife thought about, okay, how can we use this as a teaching opportunity? And so she said to the three granddaughters, did you know there's something that girls can do that boys can't do? They thought. Grandma said, they can have babies. Oh. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. You know, so there's something else that girls can do that boys can't do. Well, they thought a little longer, and Grandma said, well, they can nurse babies. And there are some things that women can do that men can't, just absolutely cannot do. There's some things that women are absolutely superior in. But it goes the other way, too. God has made men with strengths that women don't have. And it's not that one's better than the other. We're just different. Men have 50% more muscle mass than women have. Stronger and denser bones for doing heavier work. They're designed to protect if an enemy is attacking. I don't know. I don't know why we send our women out to the battlefield, why we would want to. There's a design there by God that men are, he's designed us to be protectors. Men have 20% more blood cells than women, so that in wartime conditions in Britain, when they increased factory hours from 10 to 12 hours a day, the accidents among women increased 150%, but among men, they didn't increase at all. God has given men some more stamina to do some things than women. You know, think about this. It's not, though, that difference, equality, sameness equals equality equals sameness, even within our own sex. You know, if you think of a couple very famous men, Albert Einstein and LeBron James, you know. Albert, I'm sure, never ever dunked a basketball. And I'm sure LeBron, even though I think he's an amazingly intelligent guy on the court, and in lots of ways, he never figured out the equations of relativity. But they're equal, right? And what is that equality? Well, there's equality before the law. And an equality in that there's equal value as a human being. Even though God has made all this diversity between men and men and between men and women. Genesis 1:27, it says this, God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Now we just see in the very beginning, God made man in his image, but he made them male and female. There's a difference there, okay? Is it a little bit obvious? Men are different than women. Women are different than men. Well, I'm not even sure why I have to talk about this. But yeah, they're different. God made us different. But notice, both are in the image of God. Both bear the image of God. And both share the mandate that God gave, the job that God gave us to care for the earth and protect it and to take care of the creation that he's made. Kind of is his working under his authority. So, okay, ladies, it's okay to be different. It's okay to be feminine and to do women's work and women's thing. I mean, it's not only okay, it's better. Because God made you a woman. It's better. Rebecca Merkel, in an article, Why Feminism Insults Real Women. Kind of interesting. She thinks it insults real women. She says this. So what's wrong with feminism? Honestly, much of it comes down to a fight over definitions. What does equal really mean? Does it mean the same? A Christian believes that women are different than men, with different strengths, different abilities, and different tasks. We don't believe that this difference implies inequality. A feminist, on the other hand, believes that the true equality cannot be achieved without sameness. But a rolling pin is different than a measuring cup. And we can acknowledge that without saying one is better than the other. And what a weird thing it would be if we did. Imagine showing someone your kitchen tools and having them indignantly accuse you of believing that the measuring cup was better than the rolling pin. Better at what? If you want to measure some flour, you'll have a hard time with a rolling pin. And you'll have a similar problem trying to roll out a pie crust with a measuring cup. A rolling pin has to be evaluated according to the standards that makes a good rolling pin, and a measuring cups have to be judged on their own terms. We believe that women are different than men and therefore have to be held up to the standards of what makes us an excellent woman, judged on our own terms. A high-achieving, admirable woman looks different than a high-achieving, admirable man, and she's going to accomplish different things. That's really at the heart of our disagreement with the feminists. They want the standards, the categories, and judging to look exactly the same for both men and women. But here's the kicker, though. The standards they want to apply to everyone are the ones that have always been applied to men. Breaking the glass ceiling is shorthand for the insistence that masculine standards of achievement now be imposed on women. So let's honor femaleness, femininity. Let's allow our women to do what God has designed them for and what their heart yearns for and goes after. Let's celebrate femininity. Let's encourage our moms. Stop expecting them to be a man. The second thing that we should stop doing is stop expecting her to seek significance in money. You probably heard of the wage gap. For every dollar that a man makes, a woman for the same type of same hours, she makes 79 cents. Now, that really sounds horrible, doesn't it? But you know, as I look at it, it's just a little bit fishy. If really businesses could hire women for 20% less than men, they'd fire all the men and just hire women, wouldn't they? There's got to be something under this. And there is. It doesn't take into account career choices, educational differences. The women, that sometimes there's a difference in how long we work, or the difficulty of the work, or the flexibility of the work, or the willingness to be to do dangerous work. It doesn't take into account the fact that women tend to take longer breaks to have and to raise their children. I mean, if you think about it, if a woman decides to take 5, 10, or even 15 years, like my mom did, of a break from her career, should she really step in 15 years later at the same level as a man or another woman who's not taking a break? But underneath all of this, there's just kind of this idea that happiness is found in making the most money possible. This is the ultimate. We have to have money and possessions. See, it's okay to choose a lower paying career. If that's what your passion is that's what you're gifted in? It's okay for women to choose a career in psychology or early childhood education or elementary education, fields that are dominated by women, but fields that are on the lower end of the pay scale. And it's okay for a woman, she doesn't have to be a petroleum engineer or an aerospace engineer or, you know, a computer scientist. Those are fields that are dominated by men. She doesn't have to do that if she doesn't want to, if it doesn't fit who she is. We don't need to make money the highest choice in what we choose for to do as a vocation. Because it's not everything. I don't know, something about this, there's this idea that a woman, yeah, she needs to be an equal provider with her husband, you know, and if not, there's something wrong. Well, what does that do? It just puts an extra burden on her. I mean, she's got to be this super mom. It's a super mom syndrome, I think. You know, she's got to nurture and raise her children and do all this stuff, but she's also got to make as much as her husband. And it's just putting expectations there that put her in bondage, I think. It just puts a yoke on women that they weren't designed to bear. It's not that moms don't do a lot of valuable work. I'm talking about moms that stay at home. Salary.com every year figures out what the value of a mom who's staying at home, what that value is. And they can, you know, they kind of look at everything she does and all the different aspects and compare it with their databases of what the average pay is for that area. And they found out that for 40 hours of work, the work she does is worth $48,000. And for the 52 hours of overtime, $143,000 for a total, or $94,000 for a total of $143,000 a year. Now, she doesn't get paid for that, but it doesn't mean that that work doesn't have that value. If you tried to hire it done, you'd find that out. Yeah, it would cost you that much. You see, the value of our work is not necessarily dependent upon how much we get paid for it, or whether we get paid at all. I know my wife has a friend who chose an upscale career, and at the end of her college training, she was $90,000 in debt. And she liked her work. She enjoyed her work. But every morning, when she had to leave her kids back home, she felt regret. She so often told my wife, I just envy you. I just wish I could stay home with my kids. And she had underestimated the strength of that maternal bond that it kind of came up and grabbed her. And she's just living in this place of, I don't know. She told my wife that I just wish somebody would have sat down and talked to me about that and helped me think this through a little bit more. Because she couldn't stop working. She had this debt. Let's look at 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 and 6 through 9. It says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. What is Paul doing here? He's talking about what is really valuable. I mean, he's comparing godliness. It's something that can go into the next world, that we can take with us. We can't take money with us. We're going to lose it all. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. I think this word clothing can also have the idea of shelter. But think about it. That's a pretty low standard. With food and clothing and shelter, that's enough. We'll be content with that. That's what Americans, I think that's what I need to hear, frankly. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmless desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. I mean, look at the power of those words. A love of money plunges people into ruin and destruction. You know, when I read this verse in relation to the subject, I just thought, well, how much of the ruin and destruction that is so prevalent in our divorce culture, how much of that relates to the love of money? I know there's many factors for divorce, but part of it is that so much after possessions and things that we don't have time for relationships and building a relationship with your husband, building a relationship with your children, building a relationship with your wife, because we're after this that we think is the ultimate. In the last century, there was talk about the absent father, the absent father wound. I think in this, and indeed that's the case. Many situations. Dad just was either not there, he abandoned the family, or he was just off with some other goals and career and everything and wasn't really present with the family. But now they're talking about this next generation is going to have the absent father and the absent mother wound. It's going to be devastating for children. You know, my wife and I, we didn't own a home until we were 40. Until I was 40. But during that time, we had 7 kids. One reason we didn't own a home is because we couldn't afford it. We were raising 7 kids. But which is more important? I mean, really think about this. Which is more important? Which of these would I change for a house? I mean, we don't think about that, but maybe we should, because sometimes in our decisions, it really comes down to that a little bit. What is really more important? That I have my house paid off at 55, or that I have this great retirement account? You know, we're still at this point, you know, way, way short of what the financial planners would say we should be at for retirement. But, you know, frankly, I don't worry about it. And if I know if I was to die, even if I don't leave a penny behind, there's 7 children here that are going to take care of my mom, their mom. That's security. That's more security than all the 401ks and government programs that you could have. I mean, think about it. Is a home or a retirement account, is it which really contributes most to your happiness? Which contributes most to your security? Most important, which contributes most to glorifying and honoring God and advancing the kingdom? I mean, these are questions. I'm not saying that, you know, don't hear me say that you can't use family planning or you have to have as many kids as it's against God's will. You have to have as many kids as possible, or don't hear me saying that a woman shouldn't have a high-powered job, or that women shouldn't work, or they should always stay home. I'm not saying any of those things. I'm just trying to help us think, well, let's just think it through. What's really valuable? What's really going to honor God the most? If we have those principles, then we can make all these decisions in light of we're seeing the principles. The third thing I'd like to say, just something to do
rather than to stop doing.
Something to do. Embrace the true value of children. We already just mentioned this a little bit. Embrace the true value of children. Let's look at Psalm 127, verse 3. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The New American Standard says they're a gift. The fruit of the womb is a reward, like arrows in the hand of a warrior, or the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. Do you believe that? Do you believe children are a gift? Children are a reward? Well, I think we kind of do, but let me ask you this. Why do we wait till we're 30 to have them? I mean, if I have a gift and a reward, I want to get it as quickly as I can. And why do we just have a few if they're really all that valuable? Or are there other things that we think are more valuable? And what warrior wants to go out into the field with two arrows in his quiver? Probably not smart. Do you really believe that? The man or woman who has his quiver filled with them, that's a blessed person. That's blessed. And I think, you know, there's some things in our culture that have made the value of children less obvious. You know, it used to be the word Noah, the name Noah, it means rest. And the reason that his parents named him Rest was because they were hoping that as he grew up, he would give them rest from the work of the ground that the Lord had cursed. He was going to be their business partner, their employee. He was going to help them to survive. But in our culture, we don't have that anymore. We don't really, our children aren't working on the farm like I did with my dad. I mean, my folks, they knew the value that we could bring to the farm business. But that's been cut off with our technological society. And it's hard for children to work and to really help financially with the family. And so we pay these thousands of dollars to have them born and then to raise them. And then we're responsible to provide for them through college. And sometimes we think that. And then, you know, at the end of life, they're not responsible for anything. We have Social Security. We have to do that all ourselves. And so our culture has kind of cut us off from the value, the reason to have children. But I think it's still there. I think these verses are still true, that they are a gift. They are a reward. They are a blessing. And we need to believe that. And don't hear me saying that that's the only blessing that God can give us as parents. He calls different people to different things. God, and some things are a blessing as significant as children. If you think about it, the most significant man in the world was Jesus of Nazareth, right? He never fathered any children. There are other things that are significant for those of you that can't have children or may never be married. God has significant things for you. It's not that you're second class or anything like that. But I think that we need to see that children are valuable. Think about it. If you could, this afternoon, say, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to make a human being. You know, you get out all your test tubes and all of your whatever gear and chemicals and everything. I'm going to put together a human being. And then, wouldn't that be amazing to think about? What a miracle. But isn't that what happens when a man and woman come together in marriage? They create a child and bring another human being. And that is a significant thing. By far the most significant thing I've ever done in life, the seven children God has given us. Now, obviously, God has to do it. It has to be in his plan, but it's something we should see as significant. Fourth thing I'd like to say that we need to do is to encourage her. Encourage her in what really is a difficult assignment. For young moms, here's an encouraging slide to look at. Don't worry, new mom. You're not the first one to throw a towel on peed-on sheets and go back to sleep. (Laughter) Or here's another one. How do I put this? You will never sleep in again. So that's maybe a little bit of an overkill. Maybe your husband will give you a chance to sleep in, but it does change your life, having a child. And I think most parents, as they embrace parenting, they realize this is way more than I thought. And you suddenly get very appreciative of your parents, seeing what all it takes to raise a child. It is a difficult task. It is challenging, and this is one reason that we tend to shy away from it. We just think, wow, it's just a lot of work. I don't know if I can do that, and some of these other things. And there are women who, they actually feel trapped in all the busyness and the diaper changings and the laundry and the cooking and the constant noise and confusion and constant needs and the isolation from adult company. It's a difficult challenge. It really is. It's not an easy calling. And sometimes we're in that, we want to be on the other side of the fence. I wish I could go back to work. That's understandable. It's difficult. But think about this. I think that if you choose a calling that you can do in your own strength, very highly likely you have missed the calling of God, because God's calling is always beyond us. It's always more than what we can do. It's always challenging to us. God calls us to things, and by doing that, He's calling us to things beyond us so that He can walk with us and so that we can be dependent on Him and so that He can show Himself in this world in ways that we never would if we could just do everything ourselves. So I think that we should expect that whatever God calls us to, it'll be beyond us. I mean, this is a challenge, a tremendous challenge to mother well, but so is it a challenge to father well, or to pastor well, or to engineer well, or to nurse well, or whatever the calling God calls you to is a challenge. And it's beyond us. We need to trust in Him. Dawn, I asked her when I was preparing this message, I said, what do moms struggle with? And she said, they struggle with thinking, I'm not enough. I put her some things she wrote up here. I think you might have to go back a slide. Many moms are failing miserably in their own eyes at not being the super mom that they should be. Whether it's not being a good enough homeschool teacher, home decorator, cook, organizer, disciplinarian, child psychologist, or if they're working outside of the home, they feel guilty for not being home enough with the kids. Many moms have this cruel taskmaster inside them that never lets up on the message, you're not good enough. You obviously don't have much value. I guess it is true that you are good enough. You are good enough for the job, but it is beyond you. You need God's help. That's kind of a given. And I think sometimes the difficulty of mothering can actually be somewhat exaggerated. Now you can go back to the slide of the family. My wife, when she meets someone that she hasn't met before, and it comes out that she's had 7 children, and I mean, it's just amazing. People are flabbergasted. 7 children? Oh my goodness, how did you do it? I mean, it's almost like if a woman has more than 1 or 2, it's just impossible for her to keep her sanity, you know. No, part of it is she stayed at home. She didn't feel the responsibility of having to go out and make money. That was part of it. But there's this idea that, they look at her and they see her physically and they think, I think they're expecting this dilapidated, worn out old body, 7 children has got to do that to you. God made women to have children. There's some health challenges with it, but there's actually some health benefits of raising children. God has given you what you need, moms. Let there be an encouragement today. You have what you need to be what God wants you to do, what He's called you to do. And it's not always in parenting. It's true with all of us. God has given us what we need. So let's encourage moms. It's worth it. Children are worth it. It's been said, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And if that's the case, then the female sex actually is the stronger sex, isn't it? The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. Let me just stop with a quote from our pastor Matt last year ago on Mother's Day said this, "Mom, who is never enough, plus God, who is infinitely enough, equals mom enough." And one final thought. Life doesn't come with a manual, it comes with a mother. Now, we're Christians, we have a manual, but children can't read it, so that's why he gave them a mom. So let's go ahead and pray. Lord, we thank you. We thank you that you have made us as we are, with diversity and differences between men and women. And Lord, help us not to fall into that trap of thinking that women have to be just like men or men like women, that we can celebrate femininity and we can celebrate masculinity and we can rejoice in it. Lord, thank you too that you've given us more important things than just having the most money possible. There's valuable things like good relationships with our husband and our wife and our children and having a meal together as a family. And a lot of these things, we may not get paid for them, but in a way we do eventually because they're valuable. Lord, help us to honor moms today, to encourage them, to let them know their work is worth it. And help us to honor children and to realize that that's a work, a very difficult work, but one that is valuable. So we thank you for these things. We thank you for your word that teaches us. In Jesus' name, amen.